House Committee coming to, Judiciary coming to order today is March 16th, 2017. Open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2739.
Chair Becker, members of the committee, House Bill 2739 creates an avenue for a person to sue the patent holder of a GMO product if the GMO product is found on land without permission.
Okay, thank you. And we're, as you can see, we have a big group of people who want to speak today, so we will be timing it and trying to keep it. We'll start out with 4 minutes as the outside, and hopefully you can speak less. If somebody's already made your point, it would be helpful if you don't need to say it twice. Well, the first panel will call Sandra Bishop, Amy Van Saun, Jenny Erstrom, and Ray Seidler. Probably mispronounced all of those. But. Gary, not Danny. So. And you can go in any order, but please remember to state your name when you first start speaking for the record.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I'm here representing today our family farms. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before the committee today and to really get into the discussion of this very important issue. I'm here today to support House Bill 2739. This is a very simple, straightforward bill. I have to tell you a little bit of a backstory. We got the first draft from Ledge Council, and it was 6 pages, and we took one look at it and said, nope, it's too complicated. We sent it back. We got a 2-page bill that does exactly what is needed. I'm going to go over the four elements of the bill just briefly. 2739 creates a cause of action for farmers or landowners harmed by the unwanted presence of genetically engineered organisms on their land. That's 2 points there. And it imposes the liability for economic damages alone. So this is not a wild legal grab. We're not going to get compensated for our angst. We will only be compensated if there are provable economic damages. And the liability goes back to the patent holder of the genetically engineered material that is the contaminant. House Bill 2739 does not create any rights or cause of action against an individual farmer who is growing the engineered crop. So the basic principle behind this is where there is harm or damage, there needs to be a remedy. The producer of a product that gains great benefit, financial benefit, from a product needs to also assume the liability when that same product does harm. And I just want to get a little informal here, but to say that there's a lot of misinformation about GMOs and genetic engineering. So I think it's important to note that a huge portion, I think it's 60% of all the world's seeds are in a handful of corporations at this point. So one of the things that you're going to be hearing from some of the farmers, who are farmers, not lawyers, so they may be speaking on some of the issues that affect them most directly, but what they're going to be talking about is the need for protection and diversity in the seed supply. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our panel, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Amy Van Saun, and I'm an attorney with the Center for Food Safety. Center for Food Safety is a national nonprofit organization whose mission is to protect people and support farmers and protect the earth from the harmful impacts of industrial agriculture. And we have over 830,000 supporters nationwide and tens of thousands in Oregon. So we're here today in support of HB 2739. For 2 decades, we've been doing work on the issue of genetic engineering, and we have found that there are many harms, economic and environmental impacts from these crops, not least of which is contamination, that is the presence, unwanted presence of GE material in non-GE crops. And I will, of course, I don't know, you know, everybody's background in terms of agriculture, so I'll just back up and say very quickly that genetically engineered crops are patented. And as you, I'm sure, know, patents have with them a great amount of profit and a great amount of control. And so that is something to remember here. We feel that HB 2739 would properly put the liability for contamination on the companies who sell and profit from these crops. We ask you, who should bear the burden when contamination happens? Should it be a farmer who's growing organic seed for a very high demand nationwide and worldwide? Or should it be a landowner who's infested with a very hard to eradicate genetically engineered bent grass? We believe it's the patent holder who should pay those damages, because it's a basic principle of law that when a company sells a product that causes damage, that they are liable for that damage. It's really nothing new. The fact that contamination happens is not in dispute, and my colleague, Dr. Seidler, will speak more to that issue, but government audits, farmers, and scientific researchers have documented repeated episodes of contamination in every single major GE crop that's been released, including alfalfa, canola, corn, rice, wheat, and sugar beets, to name a few. This contamination has cost literally billions of dollars to U.S. farmers, and a single incident has run up to hundreds of millions of dollars in damages. And there's currently a $4 billion lawsuit against Syngenta because of corn export damage. So this is a very costly problem, and it's not in dispute. There's even a risk of that contaminate, just the risk of contamination happening. It doesn't have to actually happen for there to be harm. Farmers have lost opportunities and forego planting of otherwise very lucrative crops, and you'll hear more about that later. I want to point out that the burdens of contamination by GE crops are completely a one-way ratchet. The burden's totally on the traditional farmer to try and fence out these harms, as opposed to and in contrary to hundreds of years of property law that says the entity causing the harm, not the one being harmed by it, should have the burden to prevent it. So we're not coming to you from a level playing field. Harm is only flowing one way. Oregon is no stranger to contamination incidents. In 2013, wheat contamination from an unapproved variety of wheat in eastern Oregon nearly shut down the export market. And later on, Monsanto actually settled for millions of dollars to farmers, wheat farmers in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. My colleague here will speak more about the horror story of GE bentgrass that has been released from, again, field trials in eastern Oregon that continues to spread and that is very difficult to eradicate, and the costs of that. The important point to note there, and I want to keep my time limited, is that the company responsible for the release of GE bentgrass, Scotts and Monsanto, while paying some fine to USDA, has now completely walked away from any obligation to help eradicate this weed that they've let loose on Oregon. They've done that through an agreement with USDA, and USDA actually approving this crop, even though supposedly it won't be commercialized, against the wishes of Oregon farmers, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services that pointed out the jeopardy that this weed might cause to several endangered species, including an endangered butterfly, should it get farther west. So Monsanto and Scotts are no longer paying for this damage they've caused. So the HB 2739 would create a simple cause of action that allows those damaged by GE contamination, including farmers, landowners, even the government, to recover those economic damages. And we think that it's extremely important that people have a way to do that that is both specific to the harm that's being caused and accessible to all Oregonians, including small-scale operators who may not be part of one of these previous, you know, large commodity class actions. And so as an attorney, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about this bill. And otherwise, I'll turn it over.
Okay. Are there any? Representative Bile.
Chair Barker, Amy, the bill not only gives the right to sue to a farmer whose field may be infested, but it also gives a right to me to sue if a GMO is found on a public piece of property, correct?
That's correct.
So it's not quite as simple as let's make sure we're not infesting farmers with something they don't want. Is it the reality of this that it would shut down the creation of any genetically modified organisms for use in a agricultural environment? Because if you don't shut them down, then the exposure is completely unlimited. It's absolutely strict, And there's really no, I know that there's a defense mechanism built into the bill, the idea that if you can prove it was intentionally put there, but would you agree that that's a really high burden?
I would not agree that it would shut down the process of the creation of genetically modified crops. As we've seen with many other lawsuits that have happened, the companies who put these crops out when they go off to cause damage have settled for billions of dollars when they cause damages. They continue to develop new products. I think that they probably see it as the cost of doing business. Much like any other company, say a pharmaceutical company puts out a new drug, it might go out to cause harm and they might have to pay out, but you know, new drugs continue to be made. So I don't think that there is at all a risk of shutting down the industry. And the reason that we included the idea that a citizen could sue on behalf of the government was that for counties, especially like Malheur County, where Jerry is from, and he's going to speak about, that may not have the funds and resources to protect themselves when public property, and not just counties but other local jurisdictions, may not have the resources to protect themselves if their property is getting damaged. So we wanted to have a citizen suit type option, which is nothing new to have, to be able to make sure that people can enforce this law. So that's the reason for it. But I don't think that it unduly complicates it. I think citizen suits are pretty standard in a lot of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have some other questions as we go along. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greenlight.
Representative Greenlight.
Yes, I'm interested in the question of how far back you go to get to the deep pocket. The definition of a license of a patent holder is that they have the ability to license their product. The extent to which a patent holder licenses a product to a different company, say to Monsanto, and Monsanto is the one that sells the product, why wouldn't they be the target rather than going the next step up to the patent holder?
I think if I understand your question, you're saying why wouldn't we be going back to the, say, the Monsanto who created the product and who holds the patent on it?
Well, you are going back to that.
We are. Yeah, that's the...
No, my question is I invent a genetically modified product and I license now somebody else to sell it. So
why wouldn't the license?
Monsanto. I've done a private agriculture. I have this patent. I license Monsanto. Monsanto sells it. Why isn't Monsanto the target? Why is it coming through the company that sells the product to come back to the patent holder?
Well, the idea behind it being the patent holder is because that's where the trait is, you know, marked, so that's what you can go back to and say, okay, this is the person who created this product and who is putting it out into the world. So it's in part due to
created,
the realities of.
But they're not necessarily putting it out into the world. That may be somebody else that's doing that.
Right. Well, if you're talking like about, say, a seed seller, you know, a retail level seed seller.
No, I'm not.
I'm sorry, maybe I don't understand.
Just assume that the patent holder is the only one that ever sells the product?
No, but it assumes that the patent holder is the one that is, you know, profiting off of the product, who's created it, and who's, you know, put it out, licensed it out into the world to be used. So, therefore, they should be the ones who, you know, pay out when something goes wrong. And especially, and also, like I said, that, and I think that Dr. Seidler can speak more to this, that the realities of when we find this, you know, when a crop is contaminated and it shows up that there's a patented trait, you can find the patent holder very easily. And that's the way to trace it back. Who wound up selling it or, you know, who grew it is not the issue at all in this bill.
No, I was wondering why it's not. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll be back to this.
Okay. And Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Barker. So, Amy, you referenced several lawsuits. I'm a little confused because if it sounds like people are suing them now, and therefore why do we need a bill that says you can sue them?
So those lawsuits tend to use theories of liability like public and private nuisance, strict liability, things of that nature, and negligence are some of the ones that I've seen. And while those theories might potentially be useful and might be enough, this bill would specifically say, yes, you have a cause of action. We don't have to, go under any of those other more broad you know, theories of liability, that it's specifically addressing the harm that exists, and that it's more accessible to a smaller operator who may be less sophisticated than, you know, the large class action law firms that tend to take on those big commodity level class action lawsuits. So we thought it was more specific to address the harm and more accessible to more Oregonians.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bear with me, I'm a little out of my element here, so, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Erstrom. I'm a farmer in Malheur County, and I support HB 2739. Primarily, there's a couple of reasons. One is after seeing the damage done by the genetically engineered creeping bank grass in Malheur County, I believe that it should be the patent holder, Scott Seed, who should be responsible for the control and or abatement of that, what has now become a weed in Malheur County. As a former BLM natural resource specialist in charge of weed control and current chairman of the weed board, I understand a little bit about what's going on. I am a farmer as well. I farm a little over 800 acres. 500 to 600 acres of my crops are seed crops. Non-GMO alfalfa seed is the primary crop that I raise. Old days, you could have a quarter mile in isolation and raise from the next crop of alfalfa and have certified seed. Now, with the GMO issue of GMO alfalfa out there, alfalfa field a mile away can cross-pollinate with my alfalfa that is, and it makes it GMO, it will test for GMO, and therefore makes it almost impossible for me to sell in the current market. It drops the value down probably 30 to 40%, and we're working on pretty tight margins as it is. Anyway, to get on to the bent grass, this is a classic example of why this bill is necessary, in my opinion. GE bentgrass was engineered by Scotts to be resistant to Roundup, and it escaped from field trials in Jefferson County and Canyon County, in Jefferson County, Oregon, Canyon County, Idaho. From the time it escaped in Canyon County, Idaho, which was approximately 2004, the winter in January of 2011, which would have meant just after the 2010 growing season, we're looking a little over 5 years. The inventory was done in Malheur County. There were approximately 35 to 40,000 acres of this stuff that had infected our ditches, our drain ditches, all of our waterways, as well as it has been now identified to being in the Snake River and has shown up on islands in the Snake River. The only limited number, there is only a small amount of stuff that can control it. The only way it can be controlled is if it's on this table here where it's dry land. If it's next to water, there's absolutely nothing labeled, and there's no herbicide labeled for it to be abated. It's just not there. On ground, yes, we can deal with it, but in the water, we can't. Unfortunately, in the water is where it does the best, and it seeds, the water carries it down the river, and we all know what happens from that aspect. Scott's made a lot of headway in controlling it for 4 years. Now, they were fined $500,000 for the escape in Jefferson County. They were not fined at all for what happened in Canyon County. They worked very hard and were very diligent, and they reduced the amount of infestation. But through the APHIS then allowed them to walk away from it, and now that burden of somewhere between $250,000 and $350,000 annually is dumped on the residents of Malheur County, the farmers, the ditch companies, and the growers. And it just does not seem fair or right. Anyone of you started a fire, it burned over onto my property, I would be coming after you for damages. In this case, Scott's walks free. It's as a farmer, I am concerned for both myself and the crops for the others in the state. The presence of Roundup Ready alfalfa I've already identified as a problem for me, as well as other growers, and what it does to my export potential. The thing that I haven't mentioned is it's coming. It's coming to the Willamette Valley. It's going to be here. Say what you want, it's going to be here. I promise you it will be the most devastating thing that has happened to Oregon's, what, number fifth commodity? When that gets here, infest into that grass, into this grass here, while it might not cross-pollinate, the presence of the seed alone and the known presence of it, or the possibility, known possibility of it being here, will immediately eliminate any potential for China, Korea, anywhere we've been exporting. And in other words, we have a chance of losing a $1 billion industry in the Willamette Valley as a result of this stuff showing up. So that is why I'm wholly support this deal. I think the if you build it, then you should be responsible for it. Don't misunderstand. I do use GMO products. I use GMO corn. I farm with it. But by the same token, there's a right and a wrong. And I feel that if you do something and it messes up my livelihood, then you should be held accountable for it. And therefore, and I apologize for taking more than 4.5 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Can I pipe up really quick? I'm sorry to do this, but I wanted to say that we're really willing to work with the committee to amend if we feel necessary to Representative Greenlick's comment. If amendments would make this bill more fair and more simple, then, you know, we're open to working with you on that. So,
thank you.
Yes, my name is Ray Seidler. I live in Ashland. I'm here to support Bill 2739. Just a tidbit on me, I study the biosafety risks of genetically engineered microbes and plants when I was a senior research scientist, not a regulator, a research scientist with the US EPA. I worked, studied, educated for almost 30 years now. In 1994, 23 years ago, we held a conference in Corvallis. We brought in scientists from Europe and the United States to say, hey, tell me, what do you think the pressing issues are going to be? Because we're expecting a new product out on millions of acres in the Midwest in 3 years. How are we going to regulate it? What are the hot issues? 60% of those scientists put their finger on cross-pollination. We didn't understand it. We didn't know how far it would spread. And Lord knows, no one, including me, in 1994, knew what we would be into today, as Jerry and Amy have just described. And I personally, as a scientist, will say we have a looming financial disaster, seconding what Jerry just told you about the spread of bent grass. Also, in addition to the bent grass, there have been hundreds of other documented cross-pollinated seed commingling events reported over the last 20 years throughout the world. And in case you hear, I want to try to correct this misconception. It doesn't matter whether process or product is thrown at you. It doesn't matter whether CRISPR-Cas9 and other high-tech phrases are thrown at you that aren't genetic engineered. That's not the issue here. The issue is it patented, and does the pollen spread? Not how it's made. And I feel, and I think I hope you will agree, there is a penalty of sorts when a GE crop is planted too close to a non-GE crop seed. What happens if that non-GE crop is contaminated? The Supreme Court, in effect, has said to that farmer, your crop is worthless. That's a penalty. On another topic, I'd like to share and ask, when exercising the right for cure under this legislation, should it pass, can a farmer determine where the heck that gene has come from? And the answer is easily yes, allowed yes, simple technology can tell the farmer not only what farm did it come from, but what company produced it, and it's called PCR technology and gene sequencing. So that's not a relevant problem with this bill. Also, on a related topic, when the USDA says we've deregulated, say, bent grass as an example, as they have, don't feel that that means that crop is safe. It's obviously the safety is nothing to do with cross-pollination potential. For the USDA to say this crop is safe simply means it has no genetic material from a known pest. Has nothing to do with cross-pollination. And please, last of all, I would like to say we're not in the business, certainly Jerry, I hope, has convinced you. We're not pitting farmer against farmer here by expressing the concerns that this bill has brought forth. We just are looking for a mechanism to encourage farmers to feel protected in meeting consumer demand for their value-added seed crops. And I think on that note, I'll end. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Byle, please.
Jerry, did I hear you say that you are using some patented GE material on your farm?
I've planted corn for, I have planted field corn for silage and use it. I'm not anti-GMO. I am just, again, a seed grower primarily. And what damage it does to my seed, as well as my exportable alfalfa, is what I'm here to discuss, to get some.
Sure, I understand. Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up, please.
So if your corn product escaped your farm, unusual weather event or something like that, the way the bill's written, your neighbor couldn't sue you still because you hadn't done it deliberately. Your neighbor still has to go back and sue whoever the manufacturer, the patent holder of that corn product was. Is that what you're really after here, is the idea that you as the farmer in the middle really doesn't have the responsibility to be careful about what they're doing on their property?
Not at all.
Okay. I didn't think so. I just wanted to make sure.
Not at all. I think everybody has their opportunity, the right to do what they want. However, if you're doing your thing, I'm doing my thing. I have the right to do my thing without the potential of economic loss because of stuff that's out of your control. The drift will jeopardize my production and or sellability.
You tip a truck over on your way to market and infect your neighbor's field, you're responsible for that, right?
Correct.
Okay. Even though that wasn't deliberate, you didn't mean to do that.
No, I'm not blaming the neighbors. That's not their, it's.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Hey, thank you, panel.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry, one more. Representative Post.
You took your glasses off.
Yeah, I did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, I guess in what you just said may have settled a lot of it for me. A lot of the concern that I have is because of a committee that I was on before, which was the Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee. Mm-hmm. We've had this sort of cases before us before, so I have a little bit of background behind this. One of the things that we were able to do was to, I think in Oregon we have this wonderful relationship that farmers have of talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
That concerned me from day one from here was, now maybe some decide they don't want to talk to each other. Maybe they want to go another route. And that concerns me a little bit because we have, a great relationship between farmers in Oregon right now that each tolerate what the other does because we love all farms. I'm a little concerned about this, so I think you've kind of answered that, but I just want to throw that at you for just a moment for your comment.
I think farmers, as a rule, are talking, but you ought to understand, we're not talking family farms anymore. We're talking large corporate farms, and they're planting what they want to plant. They're not going to confide in me. And so I think we still are talking. And I'll use us as an example. When
Roundup Ready alfalfa came on the market, I was a member of the Seed Commission, we met and identified a specific location where this crop could be grown safely without contaminating other alfalfas. And it worked perfect, and it's still working perfect. The unfortunate thing is, though, they've taken that Roundup Ready alfalfa that these guys are growing and given it to my neighbors to plant, which that's their prerogative. Unfortunately, unless they cut that before it goes to flowering, those bees don't care whether they come off of my field or whether they come off of the neighbor's field. They come off, and you got cross-pollinated stuff. Every one of our crops anymore, we talked about exporting, whether it be hay and or alfalfa seed, is all tested for GMO if we're going to sell it. And depending upon the level of testing, some of it's $200. I just use a little $5 deal. I can check my alfalfa seed with that little thing. But if it's there, I'm out of luck. My market value has dropped tremendously. And I do not feel that part is appropriate for anybody to be penalized by somebody else's. As again, I start a fire, it burns onto you, I'm responsible.
Please, thank you, Mr. Chair. When you talk about corporate farms, okay, maybe that's the case where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may be wrong, but where I live, from north of Kaiser, 10 feet outside of Kaiser, all the way to St. Paul, and from St. Paul all the way to Newburgh, I don't know of any corporate farms. And maybe there's one or two out there that I've not met. They're just small farms. And they're here today, and they're concerned.
Absolutely.
They're very concerned about this bill. Those are the farms that I represent, and they're saying we have an agreements with each other. So I just want to throw that out, that the corporate farm, you know, I don't know that world very well, but I know the farms in my community, and they're having a hard time with this. The second part of this question, I guess, was more for Dr. Ray. Dr. Ray, I'm a little concerned that with listening to you today, because I have to frankly say, back, I don't remember what year it was, 2014, 2012, the Yes on 92 campaign. There were some TV ads that I remember watching you on, where you had some blue corn seed,
mm-hmm.
and said that this was genetically engineered. In fact, it was treated. It wasn't genetically engineered. So, and that was a TV ad that we can still pull up on YouTube and watch. So that concerns me a little bit.
Oh, let me set the record straight. The coloration is not the pesticide. Pesticides cannot be seen. So when pesticides are added to a seed, synthetic man-made pesticides or organic pesticides, there's a federal seed law. The federal government requires coloration of those seeds just as a signal. But virtually, I don't know what the percentage is now, around 85-90% of all genetically engineered seeds are delivered with additional pesticides coated on the seeds. That was the thrust of the ad,
mm-hmm.
and nothing more. The color is an inert vegetable color. But it's used as a messaging device required by the federal government that something else has been done to these seeds. And when you read the label, it says neonicotinoids present, fungicides present, et cetera.
We are going to need to keep moving down a lot of people. Thank you very much, panel.
Thank you.
Next, I'll call Mary Middleton, Elsie Higley, and Mary Alonis.
Go in whichever order you'd like, just remember to say your name for the record.
Dross.
Yeah. Okay. I think they picked me to be first.
Hi, I am Mary Alionis. I'm a farmer from Southern Oregon. My husband and I have been farming for 27 years. We grow certified organic mixed vegetable crops. We have a seed garlic business, and we grow other seeds on contract. I also have a store that I sell my products and also other local product. Um, on my farm this season, I'll be planting on contract a corn seed crop, a beet seed crop, and a mustard seed crop. All of these crops are at risk of contamination from GE products. The risk of contamination is a real economic risk to me. If I am contaminated, I lose my seed contract. After I've grown it, I already paid my workers. I lose my future seed contracts for that strain. I lose my selection of my strain that I've been collecting for years to develop my own seed strains. I can't undo the contamination. That's the economic reality of genetically engineered crops contaminating my farm, which is why in Josephine County and Jackson County, our community created the GMO ban that we voted in. Before I was a farmer, I was a product designer, an inventor. I used to be a product designer for the largest toy company in America back in the 80s. Within that world, I learned a lot about product liability. When you're developing products that are going to go in the hands of children, one in a million children dying on your product is one child too many. So I evolved as a professional with the keen sight to liability issues and my company being liable for the things that I did and the things that I made. With regards to patent issues, I had patents that I had my name on when I worked at toy companies. I was an inventor. I had my patent on things. I did not hold that patent. The company held my patent. I was not in any way liable for that patent. The patent was in my name. It was held by the company. The nature of genetically engineered products is when they are grown in an open landscape, they have a strong potential for contamination. They carry an unavoidable liability to other farmers and the ecosystems in which they're grown. Pollen drifts, seed travels, through wind, through wildlife, waterways, equipment. This product will contaminate readily. The producers, the patent holders of these products should be held liable for them, just like any other patent holder or producer of any other product sold. By holding them liable, they'll be encouraged to monitor the usage to ensure the highest likelihood of safety. They'll be encouraged to make the safest product they can. That's the nature of liability law. The responsible action to take is to hold them to this liability. All other industries are held to this product standard. To me, the liability, not just of myself as a farmer, it's equally important, the liability of my landscape around me. And the nature of these products, of genetically engineered products, is they can create havoc in our environment, as is witnessed in Eastern Oregon right now. Should the people that invented and hold the patents on these products, the patent holder of this product, be held liable? Should the corporation be held liable? Who else should be held liable? It's their product. They've created this product knowing that it has this potential of liability. They've worked it into their system. The liability of that is built into their system. The chance that they will be held liable is built into their financial and economic system. They are the ones that should be held liable. It's the nature of their product.
Thank you. Representative Vial, then Representative Greenlick.
Mary, I've got table grapes that I sell to all the metropolitan school districts. And while I'm not doing that under a certified organic program, I've got to be very careful with what I sell to the school children, as you can imagine. If my neighbor puts an insecticide or an herbicide, let's say an herbicide, on his filbert orchard next door, and I get drift, and that impacts my crop, should I be suing the maker of the product that he was putting on, or the fellow that was actually my neighbor that was actually applying it on a windy day? What's your sense?
I think genetically engineered products are far more likely to contaminate and cause problems than responsibly used pesticides are. I have neighbors that use pesticides as well, and I have done that neighborly conversation where we go over and talk with them and say, okay, I can't have you spraying anything after 6 in the morning because that's when the wind picks up here and you know it and I know it and you need to solve your world so that that doesn't happen. The nature of genetically engineered crops is that
they cross-pollinate and cause damage in a far larger scope than if somebody was, you know, it's just the nature of genetically engineered crops. They're very hazardous to other, you know, the contamination is happens and it's permanent. It's not a temporary event. And it's not in any way, this bill isn't about that. This bill is specific to the genetically engineered crops and to the genetically engineered patents.
Your contamination in your organic crop, however, could happen from a variety of infestations, not just a GE infestation. Isn't that correct?
Of course.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Greenlink.
I want to make clear my comments are not because I oppose this bill. I want to make sure the deep pocket gets correctly identified. And you talked about, you said several times in a sentence, the patent holder and producer, as if they were the same thing. I guess my question is, are they the same thing? Is Scott and that, who I assume ought to be held responsible for their effort, are they automatically the patent holder, or is there sometimes a patent holder that sells a license to a producer to produce the product?
I am not experienced in the ag industry as far as patents, but in my experience in product industry, especially with a major corporation, the person who creates that patent, the scientist or the inventor, would not be the one that holds the patent in the end. The patent holder would be the corporation that is producing, selling, distributing it.
So basically,
the scientist that creates the product is not going to be holding that patent. He might have his name, he or she have their name on the patent, but they're not going to be the holder. They're not going to have ownership of that patent any more than I had ownership of the products I created for a large corporation.
So language that went into this bill that would say the patent holder or the producer of the product would be superfluous because they're generally the same?
I'm a farmer. That would be something to take up with the legal department on this bill, not me. I'm a farmer of the past 27 years and a product designer before that, but I don't know that level of legality. I'm sorry. I just know that for myself, the patents that I created, I do not hold and I never held. They're owned by the corporation that I created them for.
And that corporation was the one that produced the seed?
Yes, that produced the products that I made.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello, my name is Elise Higley. I'm a farmer in Southern Oregon, and I also am director for Our Family Farms, and it's an organization that has support all over the state of Oregon. We represent farmers and help protect farmers against the threats of GE contamination. This bill is something that we proposed because we just felt like it was really fair and as simple as legal things can be. But we felt like that's, you know, the issues of contamination, I think both sides, both science and both sides of farming agree that contamination happens. That is inevitable. If people didn't really believe that this contamination caused harm, nobody would be here opposing the bill today. If they thought that there was nothing going on and no harm was being done, why would they care if this bill was passed? Because if it passed and there was really no harm being done, what's the problem? If somebody says, Elise, you're going to be responsible for all of these things if you cause damage, and I say, I know what I'm doing is not causing damage, then I wouldn't worry about it. I'd be fine with it. So it's clear by the people coming into this room that they are fearful and afraid and that they know that damage is being done currently. And that is why we have such strong opposition. I think we really just need to look at where that opposition comes from and follow the money, like you're talking about, who are the patent holders and who should be held accountable. And for me, on my farm, we make about 50% of our revenue on our farm from seeds. And I, like Mary, grow corn seed out. And I feel that when and if my corn seed was contaminated and I had economic loss and my seed diversity was lost on my farm, I feel like the patent holder should be responsible for that. For me, is particularly, I don't know where that corn pollen came from. So it's so easy because all I have to do is get my seed tested. It links right back to the patent holder because there's a genetic tracer in that patented corn seed or whatever seed you have. So it's not like I'm searching around my neighborhood or did it come on a truck? I don't know how it got there. It's super easy and simple to trace it back to who's responsible. These chemical companies are gaining millions and billions of dollars off of these patented seed crops, and I feel like they should be responsible when things go wrong. They're making all the benefits when things go right. They're not sharing any of that with us, but they certainly should pay for it when things go wrong. I don't think it's okay that Malheur County citizens are going to have to pay for the cleanup of this bent grass issue. I think it's unacceptable. We're in the middle of a huge budget crisis. We're all looking about how we can use the money that we have. We should not be paying for cleanup and for somebody else's damage that's reaping the financial benefits. So I hope that you vote to support it. I think we're all here to open, open for questions, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you, Representative Barker, for this time. My name is Mary Middleton. I'm the director of Oregonians for Safe Farms and Families. This is a nonprofit organization based in Josephine County. We're an advocate for farmers in our region, and with more than 50 farms and hundreds of farmers that we represent. Our region is a unique bioregion and premier seed-growing region. So that is why we are here in support of House Bill 2739 and asking for your support. Currently, our farmers, and you've heard these points, so I'll be brief. Our farmers are bearing all of the burden and the expense. I have some testimony from Siskiyou Seeds, where he talks about, and Siskiyou Seeds is a limited liability company that's a well-known organic seed company producing seeds that are internationally sold. The cost for testing for GE contamination, which he alone bears the cost of as the owner, can range between $300 to $400, plus the cost of the seed sample for 5 pounds of corn, and the time expense. And the testing of 35 varieties, which is very common for him to grow yearly, would cost about $16,000 annually. This is something that he bears because he believes in protecting the integrity of the seed supply, and he puts his name and his company's name on every packet of seeds that he sells. So this bill simply holds the patent holder responsible and essentially levels the playing field for our farmers. Oregon is made up mostly of small family farms. Jerry spoke earlier of some larger farms, but mostly in Oregon and especially in Josephine County, we are mostly made up of small family farms and the unique bioregion and the seed growing region that we are. We absolutely ask for your support on House Bill 2739.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker, and I know that we need to stop asking questions so we can make sure we hear from everyone. That being said, these are some of my home folks, so I thought I'd ask a question. Mary, I mean, we've had a lot of good conversations about GMOs in general. Sorry, Middleton. And one of my concerns with this bill when I read it, and maybe you can kind of respond to it, is in Josephine and Jackson County, I mean, I'm born and raised in Josephine County. There have been hours upon hours of conversations about GMOs there. And most of those, probably 99.9% of those conversations have been positive and civil and so forth. Mm-hmm. However, I've also seen some people do some nasty things on both sides. Mm-hmm. So, where they did not represent the rest of their constituency well and did, behaved in horrible ways. When I read this, one of the concerns is, what's to keep somebody from doing a nasty thing and taking a handful of seed, driving down the road, and throwing it into someone's farm so that the manufacturer can get sued?
Well,
or the patent holder.
This is
great. And so if somebody tells me, I'm trying to read and understand that.
A deliberate act by a person other than the entity.
A deliberate act.
If they can catch them,
would violate the bill.
They catch
without
them.
Permission. Yeah.
They catch them.
Yeah.
But if they just like it. But if they don't catch them, there's no. You don't know if it's deliberate or not.
Just like just like any other liability bill, I believe, Representative Stark, you know, we sell guns in this country, and there's a lot of people that believe that gun ownership is responsible. But we also don't believe that you know, we believe that we sell those to people who are going to use them responsibly. So,
can I have a follow-up on that?
Follow-up.
Chair Barker, I'm trying to process what you just said, Mary, because in that scenario, somebody wouldn't go sue, or at least not that I'm aware of, you know, Winchester or Ruger.
They do.
They do a lot. Yeah. Okay, but we haven't passed it. Yeah. Never mind.
Yep. Yeah. Nope, that's a thing.
I'll keep my comments to myself.
We do. Yeah.
Right. No questions about
it. Sorry, we'll stop. We have a lot more people waiting.
Okay.
To testify,
so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Barbara Richard, Kent Nock, Ivan Malaski, and Ann Golden, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, Ivan Malusky with Friends of Family Farmers. We represent small and mid-sized farmers across Oregon and work with a variety of producers from organic to conventional, even some folks who grow genetically engineered crops. I've submitted some written testimony for the record, so I won't read it verbatim, but I'll just note that I served on the state's task force on genetically engineered seeds and agricultural products in 2014 in hopes of finding solutions to longstanding problems with lax oversight of GE crops at the state and federal levels. We're testifying in support of House Bill 2739 today because the state to date has not provided the protections that we believe were intended when the legislature originally passed the preemption against local laws back in 2013. And in the absence of any sort of sensible state-level approach to regulating these crops to actually prevent harms, the legislature should strengthen through this bill the ability of farmers to hold GE crop patent holders financially liable for the damage to farmers from unwanted presence of those GE products. On background, again, the legislature in 2013 preempted local communities from establishing protections for farmers, but I think the intention of that was that there would be some sort of state regulatory oversight. In fact, the Senate Bill 863 back at the time talked about putting the exclusive regulatory power over GE crops into the hands of the state. But one of the things that occurred during the GE task force is we identified a number of key policy considerations, and those included the need to clarify the role of the state of Oregon in regulating GE crops, the need to protect Oregon's organic and conventional non-GE markets, and to fill data gaps on GE crops used in Oregon because they are not as widely used here as in other states. And I think, frankly, partly because Oregon is not a major GE crop producing state, there are key organic and conventional farming sectors here that face significant market risk and legal liability from some of the genetically engineered crops that are grown here and that may be in the future. But again, the state of Oregon to date has essentially failed to regulate these issues at the state level. And our fundamental position here today that if the Oregon Department of Agriculture continues to maintain the position that it has, that it cannot create, maintain, or enforce state-level protections, and if the legislature won't give them the authority that they've asked for to create these types of protections, it's up to the state legislature here to establish protections that farmers themselves can use to hold financially liable the patent holders of these crops. Thank you very much.
My name is Kent Nock. I'm from Rogue River. I'm a farmer. In my past life, I still sometimes consult. I was a chemist and an aerospace engineer. And I am currently a director of Southern Oregon Seed Growers Association, SOSCA. And I have a letter to submit for written testimony from SOSCA. And I also have a couple of things to say about SOSCA. When it was originally founded, there was quite a lot of interest and a very diverse group of people showed up when this meeting formed. There were at least three or four Syngenta folks that showed up. One of them was a corporate lawyer for Syngenta. I believe she lived in St. Louis. And she also was, I think, the director of Oregon Food and Shelter. And it makes me wonder, you know, what are we looking at here? Another organization that I used to belong to was the Farm Bureau. They established their policies in a way that I couldn't quite figure out. I couldn't get copies of the local chapter bylaws, and it wasn't clear how their policies were established. Except I think I finally figured out that the policies came down from above, and if the local members objected to the policies, they had to somehow figure out how to overcome the feed from above. I believe there was also donations made at the national and state level. The next thing I'd like to say is, I am not a lawyer. I should have said that first. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't necessarily understand this stuff, but I think the purpose of law is to protect the weak from the strong, to protect people that really don't have huge amounts of money from people that do. And our organization, SASCA, is a group of very small farmers. We don't have any money. I used to be the treasurer. We don't have any money. So we really do need protection if we're going to survive, and we are small farmers. We don't get support from major corporations, and if a major corporation contaminates one of our crops, like Mary's corn, what's our fallback? We're sort of out of luck. So I believe that the law should protect the weak from the strong. And as far as farmers talking to each other, we certainly talk to each other. Even at the first meeting, we had people arguing about what constitutes a farmer. And everybody was still smiling at the end. Only Syngenta walked out, everybody else stayed. And we still exist. And we still, I grit my teeth when I say this, we are still open. If Syngenta wanted to come and join our organization, we'd have to let them. We don't have rules against that. We want to cooperate. However, I do believe that if you own something that's dangerous to your neighbor, and that thing harms your neighbor, you should be responsible for it. Why should your neighbor be responsible? And that's what I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Rebecca, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Ann Golden. I hail from Southern Oregon, and I split my time between Ashland and our 300-acre ranch property in Klamath County. I serve on a number of different boards, the Asante Health System Board, the Jackson County United Way Community Building Board. I'm most proud of my work with our family farms. I will say that. I'm here in support of, to express support of House Bill 2739, and I have a letter to submit from a business in Josephine County called Herb Farm. And Herb Farm, as well, is supportive of HB 2739. And so I will say that from an economic perspective, because really that's my perspective as a member of the Angel Investment Network, that, you know, the Chamber of Commerce is not separate from agriculture, that the farmers in Southern Oregon are an essential aspect of our economy, as thriving as it can be at the moment. And Herb Farm is very, very concerned and would like to see this passed, at least getting out of committee to have a full hearing. Here in Salem. They don't use the word cross-pollination, they use purity. And in order for them to stay in business, their market demands Purity. They have over 100 employees, and their sales are about $25 million. And I can assure you that Josephine County cannot afford to lose this business. And it was just hard enough for Rough and Ready, you know, the lumber company, to have to lose it. And we were all just so sad about that. And where we need to invest is about today and tomorrow and the future itself. So I'll just read just a quick paragraph here. Let's see. Herb Farm built its reputation on the quality and purity of its herbal products we produce. The purity of our herbs we achieve through our seed-to-shelf vertical integration is a key competitive differentiator in the marketplace. So this is about contracts. This is about marketing. This is about business. And let's not kid ourselves. And if we continue to invest and support new and emerging and existing businesses so that they can continue to grow and thrive, we will we'll benefit from that. There's no question about that. And so they see this piece of legislation as protection for them. And so I would just add that, you know, in any product liability, you know, when the hoverboard blows up and burns the house down and a little child dies, the manufacturer takes responsibility. And when IKEA dressers fall on a little child and they're injured or they pass, they take responsibility. So it's really just asking people to, you know, to be an adult, take responsibility for the work that you do and own it. Integrity in that respect, I think, is very, very important, and it's an Oregon value that we all support. So thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hello, Chair Barker and the rest of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Barbara Richard, and I came here from Ashland. Much of the testimony that's already been offered has already touched on most of the things I was going to say, but I would like to say one thing, and that's I'm not a farmer, I'm not a lawyer, but I am a taxpayer, an Oregon taxpayer, and the idea that Oregon taxpayers are going to have to bear the brunt of contamination events like what's happening with the creeping bentgrass, and it's only a matter of time before it continues to creep or move in whatever ways it does to contaminate even state-owned land. There will be economic damages that the state is going to have to be responsible for. House Bill 2739 provides a very clear and simple path to recover those damages. So I urge your support for that. I also came with, I have some testimony from the Rockford Grange in support of 2739. They're in Hood River. And I have a document that offers the truth about genetically engineered crops. There are a lot of myths, and this will help clarify the truth. Thank you.
Thank you, panel. Barry and Steve Strauss and Greg Lober, please. Just go ahead in any order. Just identify yourself for the record.
Okay.
Fine.
Should I go ahead?
Yes.
My name is Steve Strauss, professor at OSU. Thanks, Chairman Barker, distinguished members of the committee, for the chance to talk today. I've come to Salem to testify against this bill from the viewpoint of a working biotechnology researcher and teacher. I speak as an individual scientist. I do not speak for OSU or as an employee of OSU. At Oregon State, I've conducted research on tree crops, taught undergraduate and graduate classes on biotechnology and society for 2 decades. I was director of the OSU Outreach and Biotechnology Program within the College of Agricultural Sciences for 8 years, and was a member of the Governor's Task Force on GMO crops from 2012 to 14. Today, I'll give you a broad view of crop improvement past and future and where biotechnology fits. I will let others tell you about how Oregon is managing coexistence among different types of farming and of the economic and legal issues thereof. Genetic modification is the basis of civilization. That's right. Genetic modification is the basis for civilization. Without the extensive modification of most of our wild plants and animals to make them suited to cultivation, we would not have anything resembling today's agricultural productivity, and we therefore would not have cities and laws and all the benefits we take for granted every day. And in making these modifications, we have taken the best plants and animals from wherever we could find them, moved them all over the world, hybridized and propagated them, and we continue to do this at an increasingly rapid rate today. And in doing this, genes move to and from varieties and places, forming admixtures all the time. This is not something that's new to genetically engineered crops. Obviously, all of this is in no sense natural, though those against biotech crops will often tell you so in an effort to stigmatize the newer forms of genetic modification. And they will often tell you that patents are bad and only undertaken by evil corporations, but they are in fact widely used to promote investments in new science and technology of all kinds. Patents are, of course, widely used by plant breeders and crop biotechnologists, including those working on Oregon crops at OSU. Although genetic modifications have been major contributors to agricultural development for thousands of years, for the majority of our history, we have not had the benefits of science to tell us what we were actually doing. And, of course, we did it very slowly and inefficiently as a consequence. Increasingly, we have such knowledge. Why should we not be able to use it in the most innovative ways possible? In my laboratory at OSU, we work with a new technique called gene editing, where changes to DNA are directed with a precision and efficiency never before possible. This technique has been the subject of extensive news coverage, including a feature on the cover of Time magazine. USDA has already ruled that many forms of gene editing are essentially just new and more targeted forms of conventional breeding and chosen not to regulate them at all. There are many new applications of these methods relevant to important Oregon crops, including wheat, grapes, potatoes, corn, and more, that have been demonstrated in research. And they include many traits of obvious benefit to us all, including pest resistance, productivity enhancement, and improved nutrition. I know that many farmers, organic and otherwise, are interested in taking advantage of this new and revolutionary method for modifying native DNA. Unfortunately, this distinction is not considered by HB 2739. It treats all forms of advanced biotechnology as one thing, a stance that is directly against the global scientific consensus that it's the product, not the method, of genetic modification that matters to food safety and public benefit. Why should there be legal prejudice against the most advanced and precise methods for modifying the native DNA of crops, especially as the bill allows all other forms of breeding, including random mutagenesis with chemicals and radiation? As a scientist, it just makes no sense. Gene editing and related methods are not going away. Their potential and efficiency is too great. So my question for all of us here today and to all in Oregon is, do we wish to further stigmatize and penalize such advances? Do we wish to slow down or perhaps completely stop such innovations that can benefit farmers in Oregon? Do we wish Oregon agriculture to be known for exclusions that are against the scientific consensus rather than innovations based on the best science and the most precise technology? Should we not instead be working to promote coexistence so farmers and consumers have a full suite of options without the fear of prosecution or lawsuit? I am fully in support of all forms of Oregon agriculture and that farmers work hard to be good neighbors, but I am not in favor of one form of agriculture informed by what I consider to be unscientific and short-term perspectives having dominance over others. Thanks for considering my views.
One person, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be quick. Steve, first of all, I did not intentionally bring this because you were...
I was going to mention that, but I'm trying really to control apologize. Myself here.
I'm really sorry. It's just my cup. Steve, OSU makes a ton of money right now, and I'm fine with that, but makes a ton of money off of wheat patents. None of them are GE. Mm-hmm. Let's say one day it happens. You create one. Big Bad OSU is now a patent holder corporation. Yes.
And unlike the situation you heard earlier with corporations owning the patents, generally the scientists own the patents at OSU. And that's true of most public sector institutions. They may assign them to others, and OSU may take the major role as an institution in negotiating them. But generally it would be the individual scientist. I think that's true for most patents outside of the big corporate sector. So yeah, a wheat breeder at OSU, and I know wheat breeders and others would love to use this gene editing technology because it's very precise and very efficient. So under this bill, that would be put together as a GMO type of method, even if USDA says it's not.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Please. Next. Chair Barker and committee, thanks for letting me come testify. My name is Greg Loberg. I have had leadership positions, or still do, in the Oregon Seed Association, Willamette Valley Specialty Seed Association, and I've also served, along with Steve and others in this room, on the 2014 GE Task Force of the Governor. I'm the manager of West Coast Beet Seed Company in Salem. We produce sugar beet seed that is genetically engineered to resist the Roundup herbicide. West Coast Beet Seed Company was incorporated in Oregon in 1940. So we've been around a long time working on coexistence within sugar beets and among their relatives, garden beets and Swiss chard, for a long time as well. Our area produces a high percentage of the sugar beet seed grown in the U.S. and helps support over 1 million acres of sugar beet roots produced for processing into sugar. Currently, almost all of this seed is genetically engineered to resist Roundup herbicide. We do have some very strong voluntary models of coexistence. The one that I'll choose to illustrate comes out of the Willamette Valley Specialty Seed Association. It's a mapping system designed to keep crops that could cross-pollinate far enough apart from one another to minimize that risk. It's a very proactive approach by a voluntary number, by a large number of companies in a voluntary association, and the this particular system is world-renowned, not just known here in Oregon or in this country, but in the world. In addition, the seed industry has adopted stewardship policies that are based on coexistence among all agricultural types, whether GE, conventional, identity preserved, or organic. We have a couple of members, one of whom is exclusively an organic seed producer, at least one other who does some of each. West Coast Beet Seed has at least a couple of growers who produce GE sugar beets on the same in the same farm operation as non-GE conventional crops and organic crops. We have found that farmers always have done well working with each other and accommodating cropping options on their own farms. I'm concerned about the language of HB 2739 for several reasons. One would be damage to an organic crop, for example. Why would there be treble the value of the crop when it retains value for other markets, for example? I'm concerned that there could be a claim for damage on public lands, and exactly what damage occurred on that land if it's a park or a roadside ditch. I'm concerned about how a deliberate act is defined in the legislation. If planting a GE crop is a deliberate act, and if trucking it from the farm, the field, to West Coast Beet Seed is a deliberate act, and seed falls off the truck onto public lands alongside the road, are we responsible, or the trait owner that we represent, is that company responsible? Is that a deliberate act? I'm concerned about this, that there's a definition of genetic engineering in this legislation. Currently, the concern is this, that in a coordinated framework among federal agencies, EPA, FDA, and USDA, in that coordinated framework of those three agencies, the definition of genetic engineering is being revisited and in all likelihood will be revised, and Steve referred to that somewhat. This legislation runs out ahead of federal revisions that are ongoing. And finally, I think it is meant completely and fully intentionally to discourage the production of GE crops in our state, which limits choices for Oregon growers. I urge your opposition. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Barry Bashu. I farm near Sandy, Oregon, where my wife and I raise flowers, vegetables, berries, and pumpkins. We have utilized conventional, biotech, and this spring are scheduled to plant our first organic crop on our small farm. I'm honored to be here as president of the Oregon Farm Bureau, representing the state's largest and only general agricultural farmer organization. Our members are proud of Oregon's diverse agriculture and its over 220 commodities as they embrace all types of production methods. As you will find from other testimony today, plant patents are not something new or unique. They are commonplace in organic, conventional, and biotech crops and farms across Oregon and the U.S., berries, vegetables, nursery stock, and a broad range of other crop choices. Cross-pollination is not exclusive to GE. It has been dealt with by farmers since the beginning of farming, but we deal with it successfully on several levels. Who do I go to when my neighbor plants colored corn and it cross-pollinates with my sweet corn? They are non-GE. Who pays me for that? Who pays me for loss of crop in the rain? Who pays me for loss of commodity prices? There are not simple answers to every crop loss and mistake made in agriculture. It is age-old, and we deal with it across fences. Previous testimony has alluded to corporate farms. My dad always said that a large farm is one that has one more acre than you've got. My wife and I run our own family farm that was established as a family S corporation. We are the sole stockholders and perform over 90% of all of the work on the farm. My wife actually probably 89% of it. I didn't realize until today that that was somehow a bad thing. As to the Farm Bureau policy process, I can assure you that as president and our board, we have no influence or impact on our policies. They come directly from our members and from our committees made up of members, and they are all voted on by our representative members at our House of Delegates. Patents are designed to protect intellectual property rights of individuals and research institutions. They are fundamental to research, the development of new products and technologies, and future progress. They are critical to allow the developers the opportunity to recoup the enormous costs of development and research. They are the backbone of new technologies and products. Without innovation, on my farm, I'd probably still be using the back end of a mule for a compass. Ned Ludd would be very happy. Agriculture has always been the earliest adopters of new technologies. We are expected to produce more with less, limiting access to any technology, limits our ability to meet demands on production, and more importantly, the diversity that is iconic Oregon agriculture. Unfortunately, by singling out biotech patents for severe restrictions, the outcome of this legislation will be to demonize one form of agriculture over another. Our members are weary of having to defend the diversity of agriculture and the options available to them. I continue to worry that legislative attempts to prioritize what can and can't be grown will do irreparable harm. When growers purchase biotech seed, they enter into a contractual arrangement with the patent holder as to conservation and environmental requirements, the use of the seed, planting and cultivation restrictions and suggestions, etc. These are well documented and successful on the ground. To impose outlandish fines on these patents for inadvertent presence of GE is unprecedented. Once the seed leaves the warehouse, its use is in control of the farmer and the contractual arrangements and out of the hands of the patent holder. The logical conclusion is future legislation to hold Ford Motor Company responsible for auto accidents. I was selected by Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack to serve on the Agriculture and Biotechnology in the 21st Century Committee, along with 21 other members from across the U.S. representing all forms of agriculture, universities, and organic, conventional, and biotech farmers. We met several times with two separate charges and always referred to the value of diversity in production methods and recognized the successes of coexistence nationwide. We also reiterated our support for all production methods inclusive of biotech, identity preserved, and organic. We discuss patents and the very important role they play in diversity. Unfortunately, this bill will be used by some as a means to ban GE production in this state, foregoing the science and the facts surrounding the safety and necessity of these products. A national USDA survey of organic growers showed that only 1% of growers nationwide reported any economic loss due to inadvertent presence. None of those were from Oregon. No one has ever lost their organic certification due to inadvertent presence. If farmers have entered more restrictive contracts, they make a risk-benefit decision. Why have a conversation about coexistence when it's just easier to demonize your neighbor and take control of what they can and cannot plant? Worse, the treble damages are clearly punitive. Does punishment for ideas and intellectual endeavor enhance our legislative process? what patent holder would do business in Oregon agriculture, the impact would be less choice instead of more. This bill is the makings of horrible public policy and precedent. Does Oregon really want to be known as a technological desert? Make no mistake, while this bill is written would single out and stigmatize biotech patents, it is a short step to include other patents as someone decides they don't want their neighbors to grow it. Previous testimony suggested reasons for opposition. Actually, we are opposed because we respect diversity in all the tools in agriculture. We are opposed to legislation which limit our choices instead of expand them. The future of agriculture is bright and limitless if we are open to change and progress. In the interest of diversity and innovation, I urge you to oppose House Bill 2739.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you, panel. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll call Kevin Richards. Pete. Postulate?
Postulate.
And Roger Byer.
Pretty close.
Please. You can go in any order, just go ahead and start and identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, thanks very much for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. My name is Kevin Richards. I farm with my family in Madras, the other side of the mountains, and we raise hybrid carrot seed, Kentucky bluegrass seed, peppermint for oil, hay, wheat, and as of a little bit over a decade ago, we were early adopters and have since then raised genetically engineered herbicide-tolerant alfalfa very successfully and to great environmental and on-farm benefits for us. I've provided some written testimony, but for this oral portion, I wish to just emphasize a couple points that have come up this afternoon. One is that, as was mentioned just a moment ago, patents are not new, and they're not unique to modern biotechnology. So if my understanding is correct, I'm not a legal historian, but I do buy a lot of seed, and I raise and sell seed. But patents and plant variety protectants have been around in the U.S. since the 1930s, and patents for plants, utility patents for plants, have existed since the 70s, and it wasn't until 1994 or mid-90s when products of modern biotechnology became commercially available and grown by farmers in the U.S. And so intellectual property rights, patents, have existed for a long time. And are not unique to GE crops. In fact, the herbicide-tolerant alfalfa that I raise on my farm is, of course, patented, but so is virtually every other crop that I raise on my farm. We raise wheat for both for seed and grain. That is protected under intellectual property law. It's a proprietary variety. We raise bluegrass for seed, which is also those varieties either currently are or have been developed under patent protection and intellectual property right protection. The peppermint that we grow is, there's many different varieties that have been developed to be resistant to diseases, not GMO varieties, but those have been developed often in small by small research companies or by public institutions and developed under patent and intellectual property right protection. So this is not something that's new to agriculture, but the bill before you today would treat genetically modified crops as being very unique and without any scientific or meaningful legal distinction. While I strongly oppose the bill before you, I'll agree with the proponents that spoke earlier that unintentional presence and genetic drift is a reality in agriculture. In fact, it's a reality for pretty much every crop that I grow on my farm, and it's not new and it's not unique to genetically engineered crops and the existence and the cultivation of genetically engineered crops. It's one of the greatest risks I face, but it's a manageable risk. In fact, just to highlight one point, I raise hybrid carrot seed, which is the highest value seed crop that I raise on my farm. The tolerance level for alfalfa seed, which is similar in size and very hard to clean out of carrot seed, is essentially zero. The tolerance for alfalfa seed in my carrot seed crop is essentially zero. And yet, this year, I have a carrot seed crop grown 10 feet away from a GE alfalfa seed, or not alfalfa seed, but convention or GE alfalfa for forage field. And in fact, my crop rotation, I raise hybrid carrot seed within 24 months after a alfalfa crop for forage. And so the idea that genetic drift and unintentional presence, whether it be of biotechnology or weed species or volunteer crops and off-type crops, those are not, that's not a new risk. And that's something that farmers are very used to managing and have a lot of experience with. The thing that I worry, the risk that I worry about much more than that is the risk of the future economic viability of agriculture in our state and the future of innovation in agriculture in our state. In addition to the crops that we raise, I raise a couple boys on our farm, and I hope that they'll aspire to come back and farm with me someday. And I just, I hope that that in a small state or a relatively small state like ours, where we rely on specialty crops with relatively small markets, and also we have a history of small research, small seed companies, and small public institutions doing important agriculture research. I hope that we won't create barriers to innovation, which really offer a lot of promise for my boys in the future of agriculture on our farm and across the state.
Okay,
thanks
thank
very
you.
Much.
Roger. Okay, please.
Hello, my name is Pete Polstaway. I farm just in and around the Canby area. We have about a dozen farms in that location. And on my farm, I grow squash, corn, cucumbers, rhubarb, beans, beets, pumpkin seed, and other specialty seed crops. We have a little over 500 acres that's certified organic. And I'm also a holder of a rhubarb patent. I'm here today to speak in opposition to the House Bill 2379 that creates new liability for patent holders of GE crops. While my patent is not a GE crop, I am concerned about the precedent of holding a patent holder liable for the actions of an end user. I have no control over what a purchaser of my plant does with their crop. Remove the term genetically engineered in the bill, and I could be held liable if one of my plants is found in the right-of-way next to a farm that uses my patented plant. This is absurd and de-incentivizes anyone from getting a seed or plant patent in the future. By weakening plant patent laws in this way, it will surely stifle innovation in plant breeding. The bill even goes further than simply awarding damages. By offering triple damages, this indicates that the proponents are seeking to be punitive in patent holders, not just to make somebody whole. As a farmer, I am worried that this bill would result in fewer seed choices being available in the state. We are not a large market in Oregon, and many patent holders may stop selling into the state because it isn't worth the potential liability. And for these reasons, I urge you to oppose this Senate bill, this House bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here as the Executive Director of the Oregon Seed Council. The Oregon Seed Council represents the grass seed, specialty seeds, clover, and meadowfoam producers and processors in the statewide, not just Willamette Valley. Seed production in the Willamette Valley encompasses more acreage than the other 200 and some crops combined, and the vast majority of that acreage is grass seed. And dozens of those grass seed varieties are patented plants. Bent grass is just one of the many species of grass seed that was produced in the valley and around the state. And I want to make sure that everyone understands there are no known GE bent grass in the Willamette Valley currently. And I would disagree with the earlier witness who said made the statement that it's just a matter of time before that gets to the Willamette Valley. I don't believe that is true. Jefferson County is another primary seed producing area of the state, and you just heard from Kevin, who's from Jefferson County. And Jefferson County is also one of the two areas in the state that have escaped GE bent grass. Producers in Jefferson County have supported a local solution to the issue of control in the GE bent grass, much like the people in Malheur County are coming to implement right now. My organization, the Seed Council, has been aware, and this has been an issue in front of that board for more than 20 or nearly 20 years, and the GE bent grass and GE in general in grasses. But it's important to note that after all the studies and all the debate they've had for 20 years, they have never taken a position for or against this process. It's one of the many recognized agricultural processes, and we support all the recognized agricultural processes. Not all patented plants are GE. As I've already told you, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of GE, not excuse me, patented grass seed varieties, clover seed varieties, meadow foam, another crop. It's an oil crop reproduced in the valley. But they all might get swept up by this bill as it moves forward, if it moves forward. Another thing I'd like to point out is the patent holders don't necessarily have control of the seed. Holding them liable instead of the person who has allowed the seed to escape is just not equitable or just. As I heard someone say, I think it was Barry mentioned, it's like holding Ford Motors responsible for auto accidents. It's the same sort of thing. The patent holders, they sell the seed, but they have no control over it once that happens. So that was, that's just not an equitable situation. So because of all these reasons, Oregon Seed Council is opposed to House Bill, make sure I get that number right, 2739, I believe.
It is. That's right.
Thank you. We'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, panel. Appreciate your testimony. Dan Anderson, Blake Roan, Scott Dahlman, and Sabrina Riggs.
All right. Looks like I get to go first. Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Blake Rowe. I am the CEO for the Oregon Wheat Growers League. We're proud to represent nearly 2,000 farms across Oregon that produce wheat. That's one of our state's largest and most valuable crops, produced in 30 of Oregon's 36 counties. 90% roughly of our production goes to the export market. I think that's probably the highest share of anything produced agricultural production in Oregon. It is one of our most important export crops and accounts for hundreds of millions of dollars of direct and indirect value to the economy, especially Oregon's rural economy. As you probably know, there is no, I emphasize no, GE wheat in commercial production in the world. We're fine with that, because at this time our export markets and many of our local organic and specialty wheat markets, they aren't currently receptive to GE wheat. That's fine. That said, the large majority of our growers are very supportive of biotechnology and its potential to improve yields, improve wheat quality, help us adjust to climate change, respond to changes in pests and diseases, and reduce our environmental footprint. We may not have GE wheat in production right now, but we're very conscious that innovation through biotechnology and genetic engineering are an important part of our future. So we're actively working right now with our public wheat breeding program at Oregon State University to test some of the newer technologies like CRISPR and gene guns to see if they can help us bring improved wheat traits and wheat varieties to our growers that would still be acceptable to our customers and markets. If this bill is adopted, my guess is that Oregon State University's wheat program will have a tough time accessing genetic traits, utilizing new gene editing tools, or releasing new varieties. That's the program that our growers have primarily depended on, and it will become somewhat irrelevant and uncompetitive because it will be limited in its ability to access innovation and new traits. We've had some very personal experiences in the last few years with GMO wheat turning up where it shouldn't be. With a great effort from our growers, USDA, ODA, our national wheat organizations, our supply chain, our biotech providers, including Monsanto, and our customers here and overseas, we not only survived, but we learned and improved. Our regulatory programs have been reviewed and strengthened. Our relationships with customers, exporters, grain handlers, and suppliers are stronger. Our communications efforts are better. Our markets continued with minimal disruption. The litigation against Monsanto, no question, it happened. The litigation of Monsanto did not help us solve the problem with GMO wheat in one possible, just no, it didn't help us at all. In some ways, it hindered the process. We've wrestled with some tough questions since 2013. Do we want more GE events? Absolutely not. I will spare you replace the expletive that I would normally use when I'm not on the public record. Is our current regulatory system for developing new genetically engineered crops and traits perfect and without any risk? No. Does it do a reasonable job of ensuring biotechnology innovations are safe for consumers and the environment? Yes. Considering our experiences, we asked ourselves what benefits HB 2739 might offer to our growers. Would it block innovation and the ability of our growers to access new traits, biotech or otherwise? Yes. Would it make it nearly impossible for our wheat breeding program at OSU to partner with others to access new wheat traits? Yes. Would it make it hard for our growers to purchase approved GE wheat varieties or any other crop to grow in Oregon? Yes. Would it help us deal with any future GE wheat events? No, unless lawsuits somehow help the process. We hope you'll join us in opposing HB 2739.
Thank you. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sabrina Riggs. I'm here representing the Oregon Seed Association. The Oregon Seed Association is a nonprofit agricultural trade association that represents the interests of Oregon's world-renowned seed industry. We have 93 members across the state, including seed companies, shippers, testing labs, and other supporting industries for the seed business. OSA is opposed to House Bill 2739 for several reasons. First, the presence of a plant in an unintended location can happen for a variety of reasons, many of which have nothing to do with human control, such as birds and other animals, wind and flood water, or other natural occurrences. Additionally, OSA has concerns with Section 1 of the bill, Subsection 3. It's at the bottom of the first page. This portion of the bill states that an organic farmer does not need to be harmed for patent holders to be negatively affected by this bill. If a contamination occurs on publicly owned lands, anyone who lives in the jurisdiction of the public body can bring action against the patent holder. We do not believe this is fair. Additionally, OSA also has issues with holding patent holders liable. Patent holders contract with several farmers. They're not in control of where or how the farmers plant those seeds. It is not fair to hold them accountable for the actions of something that they cannot control. We also believe it does not make sense to hold a farmer liable, as patent holders can contract with several farmers for the same product in the same area. It would be very difficult, if not impossible, to prove which farm or which field that plant comes from if it shows up in an unintended area. There are coexistence practices that have been in place among farmers and seedsmen for a long time. These producers are the experts at determining the best stewardship practices for coexistence, and OSA urges your no vote on House Bill 2739. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Anderson, and I am a farmer in Malheur County, as well as a livestock producer. Representative Wilson and the chair of the rest of the committee here. I'm not comfortable being here. This is not my place. My comfort zone is with my cows and out in the desert. So forgive me if I stumble a little bit along the way. I was introduced to the bentgrass issue approximately 6 to 8 months ago. I've known about it. I've read it in the paper. I've looked over and just said, yeah, okay, we'll deal with it. It's another weed. We'll take out and we'll go from there. When it became aware to me that we were going to see legal issues and lawsuits over this, that's when I became involved in this and put together some local farmers, some local irrigation districts, along with the county extension, the experiment station, those folks that had science people, we had local people who would be affected, the irrigation districts where the plant really loves to live. It loves water. That's where it's at. To give you a little bit of a background of how we inherited this little creature, it was an economic value. Someone saw the value in a bale of grass straw. They baled up grass straw in Canyon County, Idaho, brought the baler back home to the head end of the waters of our irrigation district, and that's how we've gotten our little bug the way it is. So from that point, we've had Scott's company working in this. Scott's Fund Company has been working with me and the rest of this group for the last 6 to 8 months to see where it can go, when it's deregulated, what are the responsibilities of where are we going to be? Is Scott's company going to be a good neighbor? Are they going to do what they've said they're going to do? At this point in time, I'm going to play Pollyanna. They've told me they're going to do something. They're continuing to do something. They've written up a new management plan, which says they will treat this weed for complete expenses for another full year. They will give the farmers chemicals to take care of it. We've heard today that there are no chemicals available. There are. The problem is EPA says we cannot use them at this point in time. So therefore, we are working with ODA. We're going through a 24C process to try and get those. Yes, the statements that you've heard earlier, they're all true. Right now, if you take every plant known in Malheur County, it would cover your Senate floor. 1/4 of an acre is all that we have. We are choosing as a working group to try and get that down to the size of this room, maybe in 2 years, to try and keep going on this. We are choosing not to go the legal issues. We are choosing to try and keep this, minimize it. If the irrigation districts are responsible for it, it's still going to come back to the backs of the farmer. Yes, I'm afraid of it. It's something that could get away. It's something that could enterprise and go to other farmers and be an economic damage to all of it. I'm not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. Yes, those things can happen. But at this point in time, we're managing it. We have Scotts at our side that says they're going to help us. I'm not going to come in here to be a cheerleader for Scotts. If they go back on their words, I'm going to be the first one that's going to be on them and say, hey, you guys said this, and I'll be back here doing something about it. But at this point in time, at a local issue, we are doing something good. Beyond that, with the GMs, I'm afraid of food insecurity. My children have always had food, but yet I live in a county that's the second largest or the second highest county for food insecurity and poverty in the state. We need food for our people. If genetically modified organisms or crops, or whether it be for herbicides, whether it be for pests, whether it be, if we can lessen that food insecurity for those folks, that makes me happy. And if science is going to do that, more for it. It's an economic value. If the economic value of organic crops were as great as it could be, and everybody could afford to live with organic crops and eat organic crops and afford them, great. We'd be there. Farmers would adopt to that point. If it's all natural, we'd go to that if we can make money. But we have to be, as agriculturists, we want to be able to make a living and do what we love to do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Dahlman. I am the policy director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter, speaking in opposition to House Bill 2739 today. As a reminder, OFS is a grassroots coalition made up of farmers, foresters, and other users of pesticides, fertilizers, and biotechnology. I want to start by clearing up something you heard earlier today. In Oregon, 97% of farms in Oregon are family farms. We are a family farm state here. And I think that is part of the reason why coexistence has and does work in Oregon. We believe that there is room for all types of agriculture in Oregon, whether that's organic, conventional, GE, identity preserved. We also believe that GE crops pose no unique risk than their non-GE counterparts. You've heard from many of the growers today that if they are growing seed, they need to maintain their seed purity regardless of whether their neighbor is growing a GE variety of the same crop or a non-GE variety. It is important they take measures to ensure their seed purity. I did also have to note that you heard some concerns earlier about herbs and growing herbs and having cross-contamination. I just want to say when it comes to GE crops, there are no GE crops on the market for any herbs that we have out there. So there is not a cross-pollination issue with that. Very concerned with the bill, with the definition of genetically engineered. You've heard today that it could encompass a lot of things. In my original testimony, I had thought that might have been inadvertent, which is why I was a little surprised to hear earlier one of the proponents of the bill say that it wasn't about how the crop was made, that if it has pollen and it has a patent, then it's a concern. That would be just about anything grown in the state. That's far and wide. I want to mention that some of the lawsuits that were mentioned earlier by the previous speakers that were against some of the big seed companies that ended up in large settlements, those were based off crops that had not made it all the way through the approval process yet. That's why there was liability for the seed companies at that point. What this bill does is completely turns around that liability and allows for crops that are approved now to also give liability to the patent holder of the seed. This, we fear, could end up at leaving less choices for seed because we are not a huge commodity crop state. So if a business is looking at the liability to sell into Oregon and that liability is going to potentially cost them more than what they're going to make, they will reconsider whether they sell things here. We've heard lots of analogies today, so I'll borrow one from that I heard earlier. If an IKEA dresser fell over on my son, yes, I would probably file a lawsuit against IKEA. Now, if my neighbor came over and pushed an IKEA dresser onto my son, I would sue my neighbor, not IKEA. At the end of the day, we believe agricultural diversity in Oregon, that there's room for all growing methods, and think that this bill flies in the face of that by choosing winners and losers. So with that, we urge your opposition, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? All right, thank you very much. That concludes the testimony, and with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2739. Anything for the committee? With that, we are adjourned. 2739. Anything for the committee?